You know, there always seems to be a lot of conflict and turmoil to talk about in our world today. Sometimes it can just flat out drag us down. So today, take it a little time out for a baseball story. It's a classic Montana 1930s baseball story about this ragtag team, a bunch of boys who played for the love of the game. It comes to us from one of our listeners and was written in first person, telling a real life story of how even through those tough times, the American spirit seems to prevail. I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thanks for joining us for the podcast today. Here's the story of the Outcasts of Pumpkin Creek. This goes back to the 1930s, all right? And it was a difficult time. It was, you know, there was still a lot of sickness, diphtheria. As a matter of fact, it hit Montana. It's in this story here. And this is written by Gene Mackin. And he starts out, "I'm 18. I can't afford tears. Pop and sisters depend on me now. The officer in the green sedan, the officer in the crumpled and sweat-soaked uniform from our drive out of Miles City, the Army officer with condolences and a folded flag." Yeah. That's... "Our lives are forever changed. I will inherit this two-section ranch, tend the herds, and put up hay. I'll support the whole damn outfit by drilling wells and threshing other farmers' crops, just like the flinty Irishman, Levi Mackin, who lost his oldest son. I got this baseball mitt tucked under my arm. I put it in my hand and turned it away, ready for the pitch that doesn't come. The worn leather, it feels comforting on my hand and against my chest. Why am I dragging this thing around like a teddy bear? The bum lambs are bleeding for attention. Pop has gone off to break the news to my older sisters, Dorothy, Rosemarie, and Marguerite. My younger sister is nowhere to be seen. They're her lambs. Guess she's forgotten them. I walk to the pen and put the mitt on a top fence post. My younger sister named her lambs after old baseball heroes. Giuseppe, Alexander, Dizzy Dean, Daffy Dean, Salty Parker. I throw in a bale of hay. That should bring Mickey Cochran, her pet deer." And take a quick time out. We'll come on back. Finish the story of the Outcasts of Pumpkin Creek. And then we've got open phones at 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. It's from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Baseballs sustained this family through good times and bad. Even when we were caught in the middle of the battling stockmen, neither cattlemen or sheep herders could stomach our outfit. We raised both, but nothing brought the families together like a Sunday afternoon game of baseball. Not one let a little feud interfere with their favorite sport. The Mackins were at most every game, within 40 miles of Volberg. Only one missed was due to an outbreak of diphtheria. Margarita, I should say, was exposed babysitting. The doc quarantined us and said we'd be arrested if we showed up to the game. Gardner, my brother, played right field. He's 10 years older than me. We finished off work most days by pitching a few balls. Didn't even have mitt then. We were just lucky to own a threadbare ball. Memories come flooding back. I was 5 in 1932. A year to remember. Each little prairie community fielded a baseball team. They topped off the season with a championship playoff after the crops were in. The teams were named after the towns: Sonnet, Broadus, Colwood, Powderville, Mizpah, Olive, Doyle Creek. But Mac played for a team that wasn't named for a town. The Sluggers proudly proclaimed themselves the Outcasts because that's what they were. Hugo and Alex Roots started the Outcasts. They played with Colwood, but that year the team filled out the roster with men and boys from just two families. Feeling unwanted, they gathered up a team from the families along Pumpkin Creek. The Powder River League welcomed them with the thought that this ragtag outcast team could provide some practice games for our veterans. The Outcasts needed a home field. So we pitched in hoes and shovels and cleared a diamond on the sagebrush, a flat below Lesh School. If I'm saying that right. I drug sagebrush into a pile down behind home plate. And then the team would use that to warm up the fire for the batter's hands. The Sunday afternoon turned chilly. Chalk lines at the edge of the field marked the foul lines and home run boundary. Adding a chicken wire backstop, bases, benches for the teams. It was time to play ball. Equipment was scarce, though. Most of the outcasts didn't even have ball gloves. They either used their work gloves or the visiting team generously left their gloves in the field when they went to bat. The broadest team in crisp white uniforms played just as well on the rough, sagebrush flat, as they did at home. The outcasts in t-shirts and jeans looked inexperienced on the broadest field, but competent in the sagebrush. I've studied the tattered news clips from the Powder River Examiner. By the way, paper that still prints. So many times over the years that I've got them memorized. One headline would read, "Wins out in ninth inning." The article said, "Colwood took a close game from the Outcasts at the Outcast Field with a score of 13-12. Now here's where it gets good, folks, and we'll take a timeout. That was a grudge game with the team that booted the Roots. All right? We'll set the stage for more here of this story, The Outcasts of Pumpkin Creek, right after this.
Open enrollment for healthcare.gov is here. If you're an insured or have a job that doesn't offer insurance, check out healthcare.gov. Due to a new law, prices are lower and more people qualify. Now, 4 out of 5 customers pay just $10 a month or less with financial help. It's easier than ever to find the right plan for you. And millions of Americans, just like you, have already enrolled. New law, lower prices, more people qualify. Sign up at healthcare.gov by December 15th.
And continuing here, that was a grudge game with the team that booted the Roots. The Roots being a family there and kind of centered. Hugo and Alex is what started the Outcast. My sister and I drove to the field. Could have walked there, but there were no bleachers for the crowd. People sat in on their cars, depending on the wind and the sun. Again, this is going back to the early 1930s. But I usually squatted in the dust along the baselines, waiting for my chance to retrieve foul balls. Eastern Montana games were seldom called for rain. If they called them for dust, they would have rarely been played. The Canes were there, too. With 15 kids, they were a crowd in themselves. I only knew the younger ones, Shorty, Fatso, Bullet, Sal, Tudor, Pat, Buster. I always had to look out for Buster. He was dead set on getting every foul ball, even if he had to fight someone for it. And he was always big enough to take a ball away from me, but I never let a foul go without giving him something to remember me by. The crowd supplied the umpires so you could count on them to favor one team or the other. There were some outlandish calls. Hotheads in the crowd often argued the calls behind the line of cars. This provided a bloody sideshow for many a close game. Broadus, as usual, had a winning streak. They won more games that season than any other team. The Broadus Examiner crowed their success. The most exciting game of the regular season took place on the first Sunday of September. I used to be able to recite the whole article by heart. Dad and Mac would listen intently, then roar with laughter when I was finished. I don't know if I can do it now. Let's see. 15 innings necessary to decide game. It took 15 innings to decide the broadest Outcast contest last Sunday at the Outcast Diamond. Up to the last half of the ninth inning, the Broadus team was going along nicely with a lead of 6-3. But in the ninth, a series of errors let in 3 runs, and the score was tied. Kane singled. Alex Roots hit to Squires, who tossed to Holt to put out Kane. Holt threw to first for a double, but threw wild, and Roots was safe. Squires tossed out Pakula. An error let Reed on, and Alex Roots scored. George and Hugo Roots got by the air out. Pinch hitter Graham delivered a blow, and Reed and George romped home. Squires tossed out Gustafson. Broadus finally won in the 15th inning. The score was 10-6, but the stage was set for the playoffs. Broadus had won the most season games by a large margin, but the Outcasts turned out to be runner-up. We'll go to that game as we return with more here from Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Come on and let's eat, 'cause Montana loves beef. Mm-hmm. Mouth-watering sizzle on the grill for you. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner, always on your menu. A top protein, creative recipes. At beefitswhatsfordinner.com. Come on and let's eat, 'cause Montana loves beef.
We're going to continue here now as we are looking at the Outcasts of Pumpkin Creek. I've set it up quite a bit. Now we're really into this, the whole baseball thing going on here. Touch them all. So this is the first Sunday of October. And this story comes from, this again is 1932, as he says. He was five, a year to remember. And Gene Mackin had relayed this. This is in eastern Montana again. Pumpkin Creek farmsteads were as deserted as ghost towns. The Outcasts didn't disappoint us. They took the first game 11-9 against Broadus in the playoffs. The folks from Broadus came to congratulate the winning team, but as they left, they vowed that our winning streak would be very short-lived indeed. 2 weeks later, most of Broadus was on Pumpkin Creek. 400 people ringed the field. As predicted, this day went to Broadus. The Outcasts were routed, 15-6. I remember the Examiner headlines that week proclaimed the playoffs the Little World Series. The deciding game was played in Broadus on the first Sunday in November. The game was hard fought. Broadus would score, then the Outcasts. Finally, it was the bottom of the ninth with the Outcast 13 to Broadus 10 and Broadus at bat. I recall the unaccustomed November heat heightened the excitement of the crowd. Everyone felt it. A fight broke out among the spectators, but no one paid them any mind. The brawlers gave up quickly when the crack of a bat sent the crowd into a frenzied cheering and some booing. The ball bounced out of the Outcast pitcher, and it was Al Pakula, and he proceeded to load the bases with runners. Broadus fans were going wild, congratulating each other on a great season and hooting at their country cousins. Al looked over at his fans, grimaced, dropped his eyes. He made a move as if to reach down for a handful of dirt. The runner on third smelled an easy win and took off for home plate. Yes, Al was reaching, but it was a ploy to draw the steal, and Al easily tossed the ball to the catcher to tag out the runner. Al then struck out the next batter. The umpire yelled, "Batter up!" and the crowd went silent. The Broadus batter sliced the air several times with determined practice swings. Al pitched him a fastball. He swung with everything he had, then connected only to foul off over the backstop. Strike one. I didn't chase that ball. No one did. We were riveted in this moment. Al bent over and squinted at his catcher. Somehow, in this simple exchange, intentions were transmitted that Al brazenly pitched another fastball to the strike zone. The bat connected. It was a fly ball to the outfield. Mac was running. Everyone was on their feet. Get it, get it. But the ball drops to the ground just outside the foul line with Mac one step behind. That is strike two. The batter jogged back to home plate, picked up his bat as Mac heaved the ball back to Al. Now Al's only task is to get the ball past the strike zone one more time. As Al winds up for the pitch, it's as if everything other than the catcher's mitt vanishes from the field. I'm holding my breath, and I watch the ball streak just below the hurling bat and find its way safely into the soft leather pocket. Strike three radiates in the air over the roaring crowd. It all came down to a catcher's mitt. Deep in the leather, victory was snatched from defeat. I gaze into my own mind, in my own mitt. I said, and I know I'll never see Mac again. The officer's dreadful words suddenly are clear to me. Lieutenant Mackin's Black Widow night fighter plane was shot down over the jungles of Hankou, China on June 15th. The pilot from Chenol's Flying Tiger Squadron reported no one could have survived that crash. I'm sorry, but there's little chance that the Army will be able to locate the wreckage and bring his body home. I drop to my knees and burrow my face into the mitt. Max Ketcher's mitt. The day he left for the war, he told me to take care of it until he returned. Now what remains of my brother is this mitt and memories of the outcasts of Pumpkin Creek. All right. Real story. And I want to thank you again, Carol, for sending that. And I want to thank you, too, for your patience in doing that. Little baseball, little break from these crazy times that we find ourselves in. Part of that we might pick up next, but I might do this other story just for the fun of it, too. Going to take a break, and we'll come on back. If you've got some comments, if you remember the Outcasts of Pumpkin Creek, now's the time to call 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana.
Hunters, as we get into big game season, we'd like to remind you that we're all stewards of an incredible resource and that ethical hunting ensures we get to keep doing what we love. Respecting private landowners and the access they provide is more important than ever. The positive relationships and interactions between hunters and landowners pays dividends down the road for all recreationists. Remember, respect land, landowners, wildlife. Pass it on. Learn more at fwp.mt.gov/pass it on.